What's up? And welcome to Espresso with Erin and Sarit, the show where you go to gain the confidence and self-empowerment that you need to live your best and most authentic life.
Tough love conversations to reveal the simple truths that will transform your relationships, your body, and your bank account.
We are your hosts. I'm Erin.
And I'm Sarit.
And we are on a mission to transform the lives of millions through the same fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, and financial habits that have transformed ours.
Good morning and welcome to our show. Today we have with us Team USA Olympic wrestler Kelsey Campbell. Not only does she look like a badass, but today we're going to learn about her badass way of thinking. So, Kelsey, welcome.
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know what? It's not every day that you come across a female wrestler. So, you know, my first question for you is, what got you into wrestling in the first place?
So, in high school, I was really competitive. I did other sports, but I'm just going to say this right now. No one ever believes me unless they like went to high school with me, but I was not a natural athlete. I am a natural competitor, but I'm not a natural athlete. I grew up singing and I did dance. I was very good at dance. And in high school, I did other sports, pretty much every sport. And I knew some guys on the wrestling team and they dared me to join the team. I don't know how the conversation took place. I do recall a couple of the wrestlers on the team that I had this conversation with. And, you know, I could have blown it off and chalked it up as just banter, but like for whatever reason, I took it seriously and walked on the team my senior year of high school. And really, I was just trying to prove that I could last like 2 weeks or whatever the bet was. And then I ended up doing the whole season because why would I stop like after 2 weeks? And then it just kind of, that's kind of always what it was. Like, why would I stop now? You know? So yeah, it was like completely random and there was no plan to make it a career. I just kept seeing opportunities and taking them. And I was very aware, and I don't know why, I think about this a lot, but I was very aware that I would be putting other things on hold to pursue this. But also I knew that I only had a window to do it, even when I was young and not knowing anything about the sport. I just had this awareness that I might not ever be able to have this opportunity again. Every time an opportunity would come, so I would take it, you know, and it's wild. Like when I, like, it's wild to you hearing it, but it's wild to me telling it because I still am so blown away that like I did that, you know, that I made a career out of it, you know? So it was random. I didn't grow up with it. I didn't have any family that I know of that did it like Olympic level, because a lot of people mistake Olympic wrestling with like pro wrestling. My brother and dad were big fans of pro wrestling. Like we grew up with that in the house and we watched a lot of that, but very, very different. So yeah, I don't know. Like it was very random. It was very, very random.
So you said, I feel like today, like you're going to like just like throw at us so many golden nuggets, but so far you've said two like really cool things that I want to dive a little bit deeper into because I feel like a lot of people on the line right now can resonate with this. You said that you were born a natural competitor, but not an athlete. From your own set of lens and your life experience, what would you say is the difference between a naturally born athlete and a competitor?
Well, and I don't want to offend or take away anyone's ethic, right? Like people put in a lot of years to achieve the goal of being an Olympian or being an Olympic medalist, which I should add are two very different things. But, and so I don't have any science or statistics to prove that you're born with anything. I think we just see people and we see they're good at something. I just knew very early on, and part of it was the way I grew up, I always felt a strong need to prove something. And that is not random. There were reasons for that. And as a musician, there was nobody that looked like me out there except for my lifelong like idol, Mariah Carey. Like she was the only light-skinned mixed female than I ever saw in the media. Like, you just didn't see it. And so I always, always felt like I had to compete for a chance, for an opportunity. There was just never anyone that looked like me, you know, ever, anywhere. And so, but, you know, Early on, I knew that I had a knack for music and dance, and I just took to that, and I put a lot of effort into that. But as far as athletics and doing sports, I wasn't just like, I was good for my community. I wasn't outstanding. I loved running in high school, and I probably could have been great at it, but the work I had to put into it, my body, like, I got tons of stress fractures, tons of injuries in high school. And I just wasn't able to do the things I needed to do to be competitive, but I was competitive. So, you know, and this is all stuff I knew about myself before wrestling ever came into the picture. So I don't know, like, I don't know if I have a very finite answer, but I can say that I knew very early on that I was always going to have to, like, fight really hard to prove anything. The world's changed a lot since I was young, but growing up, there really wasn't people that looked like me. And I mean, that may not mean a lot to the listeners, but we all look up to people when we're young. We all look up to somebody and we're like, oh, I'm like her or him. And that means I can do this or that. And I didn't have a lot of those examples. And so that was a very roundabout way of answering your question. But I think there, for me, there was a difference. There definitely was a difference.
And you know what, to add more to what you were saying, Kelsey, I actually, knowing our audience, they can probably like relate so much to what you're saying. Like, this resonates with me so much. And if this resonates with you, then please type yes in the chat box. But, you know, it sounds as if your competitive nature was brought about because you were different than everybody else around you. And therefore, because of that adversity, you felt as if you always had to prove yourself. So it kind of like fired you up.
Yeah. Yeah. Prove yourself, advocate for yourself, vouch for yourself. Dan, I'm saying the same thing in different ways. Stand up for yourself. That never went away. Even as an adult, I had to vouch for myself. Even after I made my first Olympic team, I had to vouch for myself. Because just being a woman alone, you have to do those things. Yep. And again, not to take away anything from the male listeners listening, but, or anybody, however you identify. But for me as a female and a mixed female and a light-skinned mixed female, there were just certain battles I always felt like I was fighting early on. And my parents divorced when I was young, and that's common, but you do, especially, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and there were just things like mental health that we talk about now, and it's trending, and it's like a hashtag. And they have a month dedicated to it. But, you know, growing up, that wasn't true. So there was a lot of things you just kind of had to figure out. And these are things that I've researched and I've read about. And I've really tried to widen my understanding of it, not partially for myself, but also because even now there's people growing up in this era that they feel different, and they're not different, but they feel different. So it doesn't matter what you say, they feel different. And they need to identify with somebody that understands that. Not somebody that's trying to give them a solution, but somebody that can relate, right? And so, you know, going through those things, you really wonder why. But looking back, I'm like, sometimes I still wonder why, but I'm grateful actually to be that person. I'm grateful to have that diverse aspect about myself to represent kind of the outlier, right? I'm grateful today, but it took a lifelong of figuring it out to get to that point.
Sure. So yeah, I'm sure that we can all resonate with everything that you're saying. And you know what? Something that we always say in our community is that vulnerability is sexy. So I'm actually going to ask a pretty vulnerable question. And if you're not cool with it, then, you know, we'll skip it. But, you know, can you share with us one experience from your life that, you know, where you felt like people actively made you feel as if you're different or not accepted, that, you know, kind of like fueled that fire for you?
Man, I don't know if there's like a lot of little things, right? And I'm like racking my brain because there's a lot of little things. I don't know if there was one defining moment, But I think there was a lot of little moments growing up where I knew my features were different and people would say things. And my best friend growing up, she wasn't like me, right? And she loved me. I loved her, whatever. We were best friends. But, you know, she would say things and I'd be like, I'd know I was different, right? But I think, you know, and then there were moments as an athlete where I think, especially as an athlete, just having to vouch for myself so much, specifically in the area of gender, you literally have, you speak up for yourself and there's no turning back. And there were definitely a few times in my career that were defining moments for me where, you know, I had a major injury before London. And the way I wanted to proceed with it was very different than a lot of medical professionals. And I lived at the training center in Colorado at the time. And this was like 8 years ago. So it wasn't that long ago, but I remember going through that and it was very difficult to go into the Olympics with that particular injury. But then also to feel like nobody around me like was supporting the decisions I wanted to make. And it really changed a lot of things for me. And then also, you know, like wrestling for ASU, being the only female.
Wow.
Really, being it really, truly. And again, it's early. I really don't mean to offend anyone, but it was very much separate, but equal. Right. And my coach at ASU, Tom Ortiz, he really invested a lot into me, but there was a lot of moments during that time where I really was treated as different and not the same and not included. And that changed over time. But there's nothing glamorous about breaking a glass ceiling. There is nothing glamorous about it. And people can say what they want, but there's nothing glamorous about it. But even with the injury, like I was saying, you know, I ended up proceeding with the decision I felt was right. And that's scary as an athlete when you make your living by getting your hand raised and everybody in your circle, like your medical staff, whatever, is telling you you're making the wrong choice. And then they don't want to treat you the same, literally treat you like when you go in for rehab and they don't, and you're like, I have to get healthy. You realize like, wow, I really thought this was pure, but it's not. There's a little bit of politics in everything, right? And it never goes away. You never stop having to, even after I made the Olympic team, you never have to stop fighting for yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, even the people, even there are going to be people closest to you that they're so offended that you don't agree with them that they stop being in your circle and they really make it about them. And I think to athletes or whatever you are pursuing, it is so important to know where you stand on things. You know, it is so important to be clear on who you are. Obviously, I'm older in the sport. You know, I'm older. I'm not a young up and comer and I never was young in the sport. But if you don't know who you are, if you get caught up in the bells and whistles and the hoopla, which makes sense in some sports, yeah, the banter makes sense. In a lot of Olympic sports, it doesn't matter. And you need to know who you are in all of it. In life, when you have to support yourself, when you have to vouch for yourself, you have to know where you stand. So it's hard for me to name one moment, because if you're like me and you've gone through this, it's a lot of little things, right? It's the phrase, little fires everywhere. It's a lot of little things. It's a lot of little sparks that kind of get you to the point where you're like, this is who I am. This is where I stand. And I'll speak freely about this. It's for me, at least it wasn't just one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I'm so grateful for this conversation, especially today, like with the timing of, you know, things that are going on, like this resonates with everybody like so much. But, you know, you keep on saying a lot of really powerful stuff. So like, I'm just going to like ask you questions with regards to that. But, you know, when it comes to continuously breaking through that glass ceiling and that continuous adversity that you have to keep on, you know, going through, can you share with us the importance of having a support system while going through all of that?
Yeah, totally. And it's funny. I was just talking to my teammate, Catherine Shy. She's on the national team. She's a wrestler. And we were talking about that. And we were competitors early on. And now we're just friends. We're at different weights. And I was telling her, about that, like how you do need a support system. And there are some things that you will go through alone emotionally, even though you have a support system. There's just no way for people to, there's just certain things in life that, and this is way outside of athletics. There are just certain things in life that no matter how big your community is, you have to go it alone. But I do think that there needs to be a certain element of, it needs to be organic almost. Like, I think it's important to have a support system. And the times where I had the most success, I did. And it wasn't because I was like, let me go find a support system. Like, it wasn't like, well, this is the ingredients I need. It was literally like, just being a human, I need friends. Just be, for me, like faith. I genuinely needed that in my life. And I struggle a lot with anxiety. And I did my whole career way before it was something that I could even talk about openly. So I needed support because I literally could not emotionally handle the daunting task of what I was trying to do without it. And again, you know, it's like sometimes when you're wearing the necklace, you can't see it, but it's on you, right? And so going through it, I wasn't always aware of the support I had. And I'm sad to say that, but looking back, I'm like, yeah, like I don't know, you know, making my first Olympic team when I won trials in 2012, when I moved to Colorado Springs, there were a lot of people on the national team that didn't like me. And that was a weird time in the sport of women's wrestling because it was still pretty young. There weren't really a lot of college programs. So a lot of us came from men's teams. We were rough around the edges. We had to fight for everything. And when you fight for everything, you fight everyone. Like, and so I moved to Colorado and just didn't have a lot of friends on the team. And so I made a lot of friends in other sports. And looking back, I'm so grateful because it really was an outlet. It really was like, if I was frustrated at practice or felt like I was failing, I could just leave practice, leave the sport and go be with other athletes that were like-minded, but it wasn't like in my face again. And then I had people outside of the sport, you know, with the ministry I was a part of and family, you know. But it was organic. It wasn't something that I was like, let me go fill this role. It was, and I say that because if you're in a situation where you feel like you don't have a support system, I would say instead of trying to find someone to support you in this, just be a human and find friends and get relationships. Don't make it all business. Make it human, you know? And I think that's where you are going to feel the most supported.
Amen. Amen. Man, this is so good.
Sorry, I know we only have an hour. I'm a talker.
No, this, guys, don't you love this? Like, drop a heart.
We can do this again sometime if we need to, like, to be continued or whatever.
This is totally okay. And I'm also totally okay running over if you are. This is just, like, gold. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you were talking about going through all these adversities and having to continuously fight for yourself. Now, from your own life experience, can you share with us a little bit the importance our dog is singing to you his favorite Mariah Carey song?
Hopefully my dogs don't hear it because they'll start barking. They like respond to doggy barking. My boxer Pitt just looked up. He's like, what's this? They're very aware anyways, but yeah, sorry, continue.
No, it's all good. But, you know, from your own life experience, can you share with us how you looking strong, like you look strong, like even when you're, you know, you have like a button-up shirt, like how did that positively affect you in life when you were going through all of this?
Like, and are strong?
Yes.
I mean, I think it definitely had an effect on me when you come across a certain way. But I think that I don't know if I know how it positively affected me, honestly. I don't know if I have a complete awareness of that. I think that if anything, people, young people, older people, they look to that and they see strength and they realize, oh, I can emulate that. But looking strong is just looking strong. It doesn't mean you feel strong. It doesn't mean anything is easy. You know, if anyone sees anything that I post in social media, you know, you really have to know someone to know someone. It doesn't matter how someone looks. And I'm a millennial. I didn't grow up with social media. So none of my judgments or whatever ever come from anything I see. Mm-hmm. It's always about who I how I know a person.
Yes.
And I take that pretty seriously. So I really try not to hold too much weight with how I look. So I don't know. Like, I think looking strong is good, I guess, if you want to flex on people, if you want to be intimidating, which I guess can come in handy in life at times. But I don't know if that was ever even something I put a lot of effort into.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know. No. I guess that would be something you would have to ask my friends. How has that helped her? I don't know.
I'm just curious because I know that for myself and from my own journey, like I've worked on developing a body that speaks for itself because I had trauma in my life and I don't want to seem like, you know, I'm weak and you can fuck with me. So like, it's kind of like my turtle shell, you know, my external turtle shell. But of course you said something that's really interesting. And I agree with you 100% is that it doesn't matter how somebody looks. It's about, you know, how they make you feel that makes them who they are 100%. So let's talk a little bit about your experience with wrestling. By the way, I do not know much about wrestling at all. So if I butcher the words and the terms, just like call me out. I'm just putting it out there, you know, but as an outsider who doesn't know much about wrestling, you know, here's why I see that it's different from every other sport. For one, most sports, especially in the US, are team sports. This is like an individualistic sport. And, you know, growing up, I used to play tennis. So I can relate with the, you know, responsibility that you carry and, you know, like the mental talk that goes inside you. But what's different about wrestling is that you are in a continuously contact sport where you get knocked down all the time. So like, I think the mental toughness that's required of a wrestler is just completely different. Yes, all sports require mental toughness. It's like, just keep going. But like, what happens when you're at the ring and you're like, keep going, but like literally physically and mentally, like you are being thrown to the ground? Like, for one, like, do you have some kind of like mindset routine that like, you know, you train yourself through when that happens?
So at different points in my career, yeah, definitely. And it does change over time. And every athlete is different. So I'm not speaking for every wrestler. I'm just speaking for myself because I do think that I am kind of a unique case even within my sport. But yeah, you definitely have to develop resilience if you don't have it already. And there are those token athletes that have like undefeated careers forever and ever and ever, you know, like, and I was never that athlete. So I constantly had to work on my resilience, right? And, you know, early in my career, I knew very early, like when I first made national team, I knew, because I wasn't, and I share this a lot, when I made the 2012 team, I had never been number one at that weight and I'd never beaten the number one girl at that weight. So even making national team, you have to constantly keep finding ways to convince yourself that it's worth it. And so I remember talking to my national team coach because I did struggle with insecurities and I was a workhorse. I always was. That's just how I was a preparation athlete. I wasn't like, oh, when the lights turn on, I'll show up. For me, it had to be like the little day-to-day things. And he connected with me with like a sports psychologist. Some people call them like a mental coach, call it whatever. And he really worked with me on just positive affirmations. And, you know, I'm not like introducing anything new. It's stuff that we all know. But back then, especially, it wasn't as openly discussed, right? So, you know, learning about positive affirmations and even learning about like what we would call meditating and visualizing. Those were things I really learned to do early on. With music, I learned to visualize early on in life, which is so interesting because no one ever taught me that technique. It was just something I did. And then early in my wrestling career, learning how to meditate. And I feel weird calling it that because that's not what it was to me. It was really like closing my eyes and just being still and focusing on the task at hand. And then the affirmations, you know, and he really taught me a lot about that early on. And so when I would get in these situations, I remember whether I got my hand raised. I remember getting my hand raised many times leading up to that Olympics and not over celebrating because I knew that that wasn't the goal, and just not getting too emotionally invested, like being happy with the wins. But, and then when I would lose, I would get upset. Obviously it was, again, it was organic. It sucks to lose, but then just having to, like, whether you win or lose, don't put too much into it. Just stay the course. But those weren't instinct type things. Those were things I trained myself to do with the help of my sports psychologist, you know, and my wrestling coaches. And just so, and then, you know, like later on, I think that, and if, this is something I was thinking about getting ready this morning, even like, because a lot of people do talk to me about, wow, like you really bounced back, you really pushed through, you did this and that. And it's like, yeah, but when you're a young athlete, and I don't mean a person because I did start old, but as a young athlete, a lot of that, whether people want to admit it or not, when you're young, those things come a little bit more naturally because you haven't had the years of failure. Yeah. You just don't have the fear of failure because you haven't failed as much as someone older. And you hear it all the time. If you watch an MMA fight or whatever, you're the older athletes. And it's like, yeah, I'm fighting this young fighter. And, you know, I know they don't have that fear of failure that maybe I've developed or whatever, because they just haven't failed that as much. Like they're just not, they haven't been around long enough. So yeah, I had the drive and determination and the grit, like when I lost, like, I'm going to come back stronger. But yeah. And yeah, I did work hard, but if I'm being honest, some of it was natural. Like I just, it was just there. I didn't have to like go look for it, you know? It was like, oh, I hate this feeling, you know? That changes over time. If you have children, if you, whatever, if you start a business, like your priorities change and you realize, oh, it's not about that anymore, right? And so there were different things that I trained early on to help me bounce back. And then, you know, like I think 2016 when I won and I got beat in the US Open leading up to that. Of course, I'd been there before. I got beat in the nationals leading up to Olympic trials. So again, I was frustrated, but I was like, I've been here before. And it's like reminding yourself, it's different. I'm older. I have more experience. I've been to the Olympics. I know what this is like. There's a target, but I've been here before. So you train it, but then also the experience does come into play where it's like, this isn't the end of the world. This loss doesn't define everything, no matter what anyone says, you know? So resiliency changes a lot over time. And a lot of it really depends on you and how you think and what works for you. And like I said, I've always struggled with anxiety, like my whole life, as long as I can remember. And so I had to put time into it. I had to work through what if this happens? Because that's, when you struggle with anxiety, that's the way you think. You're like, oh, well, what if I lose? And then you get anxious, or what if I win? Or what if this, or what if that? And there's a lot of what ifs every day when you get out of bed, or if you're struggling to get out of bed. And if you struggle with anxiety, you know, if you're struggling to get out of bed, well, what if, and you have to just work through it and go through your process and then show up, you know, and just, you know, get through it, whatever. Like, so I don't know, for me, it's changed throughout the years, but I think that I did have to put some time into it. Bouncing back, I don't know that that just happens. I think you do have to put some time into it.
So, you know, you said something interesting at the beginning. You're like, I'm a natural competitor. I'm not a natural athlete. So now relaying the message to our audience experiences, you know, what we do in our community is, you know, we help predominantly women, but just, you know, people in general to achieve the confidence to live their best life. And, you know, we do a lot of teachings around the concepts of weight loss. So now I want to basically translate everything that you just said to somebody who has tried to lose weight for a really long time. And at this point, it's like, you know, they think that, oh, I failed so many times. I'm a failure. Going from your own life experience, do you believe that everybody is capable of achieving success?
In terms of weight loss or just generally speaking?
Generally speaking, like in anything.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think my wrestling career, while that's a very specific category, is a prime example of that. because there was nothing natural about my wrestling ability. And anyone that knows me will tell you this. So yeah, I do think anyone can achieve anything. But what's really important, and this is, I think, a big reason why I had success, why I've had success is, and I credit this to one of my early coaches, Keith Wilson. I always knew for myself that I learned differently, even growing up in high school. Like I wasn't like a fast learner. And I always forced myself to do well in school because I did sports, and you have to have a certain GPA. Like, so it wasn't like, oh, she's just good all around. No, like I wasn't a natural academic. I wasn't a natural athlete, but I knew I didn't learn things super fast in a lot of areas. I learned pretty fast in dance and music, but everything else was kind of hard for me, honestly. And one of my early coaches, Keith Wilson, he made this comment, this is how he coached me too. But he made a comment to me because he coached a lot of great female athletes. And one of the girls he coached, Clarissa Chun, she's an Olympic bronze medalist and a world champion. And now she's a coach for the national team. And she was like my idol, like as when we were both competing and training partners. And I wasn't like her, but I always looked up to her. And he coached us differently. And he made a comment that you just don't learn the way other people do. And it was very like offhand. And it was like, he was explaining something to me and he had to break something down. I don't think he would even remember this, but it was something that I never forgot because that was a turning point where I realized I always knew that I didn't learn the way other people did, but he was telling me that it was okay. And I think a lot of us know I'm not good at losing weight. I'm not good at speaking. I'm not good. We know what we're not good at because our whole lives, people tell us what we're not good at in one way or another, whether that's not choosing us or not calling us back or not getting whatever. So we learn at, like, I would say at some point in life, we learn what we're not good at. But he told me, that's okay. Like, I just have to teach this to you differently. And I remember, because that was like 2009. And I remember from that point, I embraced the way that I learn things. I embraced the way that I do things, like the way I study film and the way that I learn technique. And, you know, some people might be embarrassed. Like, can you just break that down for me? And I learned because of that, I was like not embarrassed to ask those questions. I wasn't embarrassed to be like, yeah, I know I've had some success, but I really like, I don't actually understand that technique. And I'm actually not a trained speaker and I'm not supremely confident. And it was like a person I respected gave me permission to be who I am. And I think once I realized that it was okay that I learned differently and I stopped trying to be in this other box, I was able to actually grow. And I think a lot of reasons why we fall short is like, we'll just use weight loss as an example because it's a weight class sport and that's the fitness industry is an industry, right? So everyone's been in there at some point, but people are like, I did keto and it didn't work. Well, maybe it doesn't work for you. Maybe it worked for her and you're trying to do what she does and it doesn't work for you. So try something else. Just because it doesn't work for you doesn't mean you can't succeed in this. Doesn't mean, you know, some people are like, oh, I did Weight Watchers, or like for me, like I can't do portions. I eat a lot. I am a big eater. I just can't, like, I've never been a portion person. And I do have obesity in my family. It runs in my family. So I didn't learn great habits growing up. I had to learn this as an adult. So this isn't coming from someone that, oh, I've just always had a good relationship with food. Like, no. But I think accepting who you are and accepting what really works for you, you know, like trying different things. Not swearing by it. Some people swear by this or that. And it's like, well, any dietitian will tell you that, you know, keto or whatever, grain-free, any dietitian, and I've spoken to a lot, they will tell you, you know, there is a purpose for this specific lifestyle or diet, whatever you want to call it, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's right for you. And so I think whether you're talking about food or you're talking about the way that you speak in front of people or the way you teach or the way you absorb information, you have to get comfortable with how you do that and stop trying to, like, yes, like imitate strengths in other people, but you've got to figure out what works for you. You've got to figure out your it factor. You have got to figure out when I was the most successful, what was it? that worked for me. And we are just in an era of replicating, and that's okay because it's a compliment. But if you're just trying to be like other people, you're only going to be like a second rate version of other people. And so I think, again, sorry, long winded.
But no, this is amazing. You're just throwing it
into your question. And I'm passionate about this because these are the types of things I've had to fight for and vouch for myself. It would shock you guys. People are like, well, just do this. I mean, it's working for everyone else. I cannot tell you how many times people have told me that. And I'm like, but I'm not everyone else. And that's not me being a diva. That's me knowing myself.
Amen. You know?
And I think the most successful people have tapped into what works for them. And again, be a human. Build your community by being a human, not trying to be better than everyone. Build real relationships and figure out what works for you. And then, sorry, she was
very dancing. with excitement about all of this.
And then roll with that, you know. Anyone can do everything. So even, you know, as I'm saying this and people are listening, I'm like, you know, yes, like hear what I'm saying, but hear what you're saying. Hear what is your gut telling you? Stop being polite. Like, that doesn't mean be an a-hole and treat people like crap because I'm woman, hear me roar. And I don't, you know, there's this phrase, I posted this recently, this like speak your truth. And it's very popular. And I'm not saying it's not true, but I think it is. I feel like it's a bit of a cop out because I think sometimes we can be unapologetic, but realize like, yeah, speak your truth, but understand that like, you know, there are things that work, right? And it's not about your truth is the truth. It's that's not what I'm saying. So I'm not discounting that way of thinking, but I'm saying what works for me doesn't work for everyone, and what works for everyone doesn't work for me. And for me, that's what's real. I'm not saying this is real for everyone. I'm not saying that if seven doctors tell you you need surgery to be like, well, Kelsey said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying sometimes you have to figure out what is right for you, you know? And it's a fine line always. Don't get complacent. Don't be like, well, I figured myself out. Because like I said earlier, it changes. You get older. Your priorities change. You know, like my priorities have changed. I rescue animals and I don't eat meat. And, you know, when I was younger, I liked steak and I wanted to like breed puppies. My priorities have changed. I think differently now. And that's my truth, right? That's not everyone's truth. So whatever. So I think like over time, what works for you changes. And so knowing what works for you, but then being open to being molded somewhat, because that's where your community comes in, right? That's why we have coaches and bosses and mentors and people we call when we're struggling. It's this revolving door. It's a revolving door. So yeah, I don't know. I guess if it seems like I'm talking in circles, I don't mean to, but it's because that's life and I'm still figuring things out and I still have goals I haven't accomplished. So I'm still figuring it out, you know? So.
Yeah. Like everything that you're saying, I know like resonates with me so, so much. And you know what? Like something that we always say is that, look, by the end of the day, like it doesn't matter where you are right now. What matters is that you show up and you do your best every day, because either way, we're all on a journey. You know, like for example, our mentors are way older than us and we like it because they have so much more life experience on their hands. And I've heard it from multiple people. In fact, I was listening to a podcast yesterday and, you know, one of my mentors was saying like, it's like, you know, in my 20s, I thought that I figured it out all. And then when I got to my 30s, I realized that I just started learning. And then when I got to my 40s, I was like, all right, you're kind of like getting the hang of this, but you still have to learn. And we're all in this together, right? But yeah. you said a couple of things that are just really powerful. Figure out what works best for you and accept who you are right now in this very moment. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're not where you want to be. Guess what? Nobody does.
Yeah.
Nobody's where they want to be. And we're all working towards that. And that's why it's important that you show up instead of saying, oh, I can't. Well, you can't. You're definitely not even going to try. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, well, wrestling, I mean, is a sport that involves cutting weight. And, you know, the fitness industry in general, I think, is very jaded from my own experience. And, you know, what we teach in our program is, you know, just sustainable weight loss through habits, through habit building, because that's what's going to make things sustainable. But I believe from my own experience as a coach is that there is a big misconception out there with regards to how to manipulate weight. And I believe that a lot of people think that, you know, especially in your sport, like how you manipulate your weight a couple of days and a couple of weeks prior to competition or meet, whatever you guys call it, again, sorry for butchering it, is how you live your life and how they should live their life. And that's why they try something and, you know, they end up saying that, oh, it doesn't work. It's like, no, like you have to ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing and why is that sustainable? But can you share with us from your own experience a little bit, you know, like going into a competition or a meet, like the difference between your day-to-day life when you're training versus when you're cutting?
And even that's changed just because I've gotten older and my body doesn't do the things it used to do. But, you know, I remember when I first started working with a dietitian, because like I said, I had to learn all of this as an adult. This, I didn't grow up like eating carrot sticks before a track meet. Like, I didn't even think to do things like that. And so I think for me, like, because so in 2012, there was 4 weight classes. So either I had to, and it was a day before weigh-in, which if you guys know anything about that, like if you, or if you've watched an MMA fight, like if you weigh, if you make a weight and then you have like a day or 12 hours to recover, you can recover. You know, you really can. You can do a lot of crazy stuff to your body and recover. And so, but because we only had 4 weight classes back then, and one of them was bigger than me and one of them was like significantly smaller than me, I was either going to have to lose a lot of weight. We call it cutting weight. That's just like a slang term. Or I was going to have to bulk up and compete against bigger girls. And so for me, I decided to go down a weight class. My day to day, once I really got serious about it, it had to be a lifestyle. But I have so much respect for people that truly live healthy lifestyles, because even though as an athlete, I was extremely disciplined, extremely, like no cheat days. Like there was a little bit of room to kind of eat whatever that I worked out with my dietitian, because that's what worked for me. But there really wasn't any huge cheat days. And that was just because, first of all, I was in the environment of other athletes. I mean, when you're seeing your competitors every day and you're competing with them every day, the whole national team was in Colorado at the time. So you're constantly reminded. So day to day, like my day to day, I was literally reminded, well, if you decide to like fall off the wagon, you're going to see who you're up against. You're going to see her in a couple hours at practice. So I had an advantage of just like it being in my face. And then also because it was such a big weight loss, I just couldn't lose that much weight like the week before a tournament. So I say that because yes, I went to extreme measures to be disciplined, but there was a very definitive and tangible end goal. There was something I wanted to go to the Olympics. And because I wasn't as good as everyone else and I wasn't number one, there were controllables that I could control, like my weight, I could control that. So I literally just had to like, I can't control how good they are on competition day. I can't control what they do, but I can control what I put into my body. But again, I say that loosely because I had the luxury. I worked with a dietitian. I was in my environment. I saw my goal every day. So it wasn't like I was working a full-time job and raising kids, like what a lot of people do that are listening. So for me, like, and even now though, I will say this, even though my body has changed and I am older, it always helps me to know why I'm doing something. For me, it helps to have a goal. Like if I'm doing a photo shoot or whatever, for me, and I don't mean to be shallow, I'm just saying like, for me, if I know there's something to work towards, that helps me stay on track. For me, some people are different. Maybe you're different. Maybe you're like, you know, I just like to live this way. That never worked for me. I was just never good at that. I really needed something to work towards. And if there isn't something to work towards, I create goals. I create things to work towards. But specifically, as you were, what you were asking, like at that time, my day to day, it really, I couldn't veer off too much because it was such a big, it was such a big weight deficit that I didn't have the luxury, even with the 12 days of recovery, I couldn't just lose 25 pounds the week of and still compete well. I just couldn't do that. Some athletes can. Men can do that. A lot of men can do that. Women, we can't really do that. That's like, that's a lot of weight, you know? So the day to day, you know, she gave me a meal plan. I followed it. Wednesdays and Sundays, there were like certain things that I was allowed to have. And those were like my little, that was my 20%, right? I was 80% compliant. That was my 20%. There wasn't a huge portion that I had to stick to because that didn't work for me. So we didn't build a meal plan based on that. And we just figured out what worked for me, right? And then competition week, it's like, I mean, you're just zeroed in. You're just on a different level. So you, again, it was organic. It wasn't like, let me find the focus. It was there. Like everybody was in it and you're traveling and your practices are shortened and your energy's lower and it's just, you know, you're peaking. And I say all that to say there were girls and women in my sport that had disorders. Like I saw it happen throughout my career. I had bad weight cuts. I had there were terrible weight cuts, terrible, but everything I've said, you know, I did have the luxury of kind of being in the environment to make it work. And so I think part of it is choosing your environment. If you work a lot and you're gone all day, maybe you need to meal prep. Maybe you should not rely on eating out every day, you know, like maybe meal prep. Yeah. You have to put aside time, but if you want to create an environment where you can be successful, maybe some people are like, well, I like to drink wine, but it's really hard to lose weight if you drink alcohol. It is. It just is, especially as you get older. So it's like, you know, maybe you need to stick to certain types of drinks and maybe you just literally can only go out once a week, like creating the environment that like allows you to be successful. And that's what worked for me when I was successful in my sport and even like outside of my sport when I'm trying to do these certain things with no weigh-ins coming in anytime soon because times are weird. And there's not big tournaments coming up. The Olympics were delayed, you know? So it's like, how do I create an environment where I can still stay the course? What does that look like for me? What does that look like for you? If you have a crazy schedule, if you work crazy hours, and right now, if your kids are at home and you're working crazy hours, or you don't have hazard pay or whatever it is, what can you do? What is one thing you can do? Because my situation was a pretty perfect situation, but it's not like that for most people. So what is like one thing you can do to make this part of your life a little bit easier on yourself, you know?
Do you mind that we're running over just a little bit?
I don't. I'm the reason okay. We're running over. I won't shut up. Sorry.
Okay. No. This is great. So you said I was in a pretty perfect situation. So I want to just add a little bit into that and dive a little deeper. But do you think that you were in a pretty perfect situation because for you, it was such a high priority? So you're like, I'm just going to go out of my way to do whatever it takes to insert myself in that environment, because again, like going back to focusing on what is within your control, you're like, okay, well, I can't control, you know, how the other girls are competing, whatever they're doing, but I want to make sure because this is a super high priority for me. And again, like always having the goal in sight, going out of your way to make sure that your environment, you know, is completely channeled in with the end goal.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, and when I moved to Colorado, and just so you guys know, like I didn't live there forever. I left after like 4.5 years. And then I kept competing and training outside of that perfect environment. So I've had jobs most of my career. So on some level, I get it, especially when I left the training center. But yes, like when I moved to Colorado, I put everything on hold for this. And I am grateful. And that was an opportunity that I had that was very unique that not a lot of people have. So, you know, when I do give advice on this particular topic, I really try to like communicate that. Like, I do understand. I do, because I know what it's like to be out there. You know, like I do. And that's, we can do that a different day. That's a different conversation. But I did put a lot of things on hold to pursue this. And I made it my number one priority. And it was very hard. So when you make something your number one priority and that is your goal, of course you're going to make sacrifices for it. Of course you're going to do things to make that happen. And that's where I shared earlier, where it's like, it's, yeah, you bounce back, but it's a little, it comes a little bit natural when you've already made it a priority. It's like, well, this already falls in line with what I'm trying to do. You know, when I left Colorado and I lived in Arizona and started training here, I realized, and I started working because I needed to earn money and I had to pay rent and stuff like that. I realized like, oh, I'm still not very good at this whole nutrition thing. I still need someone to help me. So I asked around and I searched around. I found someone that worked with me and my body had changed. I wasn't able to do the things I did for 2012. And so we did a different type of meal plan approach. It was different and it worked for me those next 4 years. And I was working a lot. I worked at Starbucks. I woke up at 3:30 a.m. and because that was the only job I could get and train full time. And I needed to earn the money. So, you know, like my environment was different, but I still had to figure out a way to make it work, even though it wasn't perfect anymore. And so yeah, like I think that's where it always circles back to, well, what are you trying to accomplish, right? Maybe goal isn't a good word for you. Maybe you have to use maybe you have to look at it like, well, what am I trying to accomplish here? What result am I trying to achieve? You know, what do I want out of life? What is my 5-year plan? Whatever you want to call it, like figure that out. And then your decisions will kind of be based off of that. If someone just wants to wrestle as a hobby and they don't care if they make the Olympic team, then it doesn't matter. Eat whatever you want, go whatever weight you're at.
Right.
Like, so I think it all kind of depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. What is it that you want? And also most importantly, why is that important? Because otherwise you won't make it a priority. So obviously, you know, being a competitor at life in general, and I know that you're up to different things and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, but you know, if you could share with us like one keystone routine or habit that you're like, you know what, this has helped me to stay centered, grounded, and just on point with whatever my intention it is in life, be it wrestling or the next gig that you're up to, what would you say that routine or habit is?
Honestly, there's really only like, and this is going to sound kind of weird, and this might surprise people, There's like two constants that I've done almost my entire life, and everything else has kind of changed. Like I've gone through periods where like I don't meditate because I just don't. I don't know. I get busy, whatever, or I don't do whatever it is. Or there be periods of time where I don't work out, I don't sweat, or whatever. But the two things that I've always done is I read and I journal. And I've done that my whole life. And it's what I've always enjoyed. Even as a kid, I loved reading. And my grandma used to buy me journals. And sometimes it was to write music and sometimes it was just to journal. But that's something that I really never stopped doing ever. Like, it's kind of how I start my day. And I do it because I love reading, because I read fiction and nonfiction. I love learning from other people. And then I read fiction because sometimes you just need to escape. For me, like fiction is like, it's like that, like, it's like that bad reality show that you watch, right? And you're like, I know that this is not like something I want to brag about, but I love it. I love the story, right? I have those two actually. But reading, I love reading. I read multiple books at a time.
What are you reading right now?
Like literally my laptop is stacked on top of my books. Like, so right now, let's see. I just got Barack Obama's, his most recent memoir. I read one other book that he wrote. So like politics aside, I really love his writing style. He's extremely intelligent and I haven't started it yet, but I am excited to dive in just because he's a really great author. I'm reading The Meaning of Mariah Carey. She just started her memoir and I love it because I grew up idolizing her and not knowing a lot about her. I always had an instinct that I could relate to her, and reading it, I'm like, wow, like my instincts were correct because she went through a lot of things that I went through growing up, which is so crazy because
She was literally the only person that I felt like I could emulate when I was younger. I'm reading Heartbeat by Daniel Steele. That's my fiction grab right now. I'm reading The Book of Gutsy Women. It's Hillary and Chelsea Clinton. And I always, pretty much I'm always reading something about women, because women have always had to break glass ceilings. We've always had to. We've never been entitled to anything. We've always had to fight for literally everything that we have. We've had to fight for. So I love learning about women. I read the Bible every day. And then what else do I have here? I think that might be all. Sometimes I have stuff on my Kindle, but I don't think I do right now. And then I journal. I journal on my own. And then I have the Becoming Journal. It's like a guided journal. Michelle Obama like created it. It's awesome. If you needed a guided journal, it's a really good one. But yeah, I mean, I actually, this is going to sound kind of weird, but I actually like reading books by politicians, because like, I feel like you learn a lot about a politician reading their actual work versus seeing them on TV. I feel like you really learn a lot about their psyche when you just read how they think. Yeah. So it seems weird. I don't read it because I'm trying to like, it's not a confirmation bias thing. I'm not trying to be like, see how awesome they are. It's more like really, what were you thinking during this time? Like, what were you thinking during this period of your life that we all saw on the news, you know? So yeah, I read a lot and I journal.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I had an idea of a gift that we are going to send you that I think will speak to you boldly. But we will connect with regards to that after the episode. But, you know, it also turns out that you're an ex-endurance athlete. And we are supporters of ex-endurance as well. You know, would you mind sharing with us, for one, like, why ex-endurance? And then also, what products from ex-endurance do you use?
Mm-hmm. So it's so funny. And I don't know if they shared with you that whole initial interaction, but so I had been with another supplement company for a long time, and that company is well trusted. They only sponsor Olympic athletes. Like, it's a very, and as an athlete, you have to use brands that are trusted because we get drug tested. So that is important. You don't pick brands because they have a massive following online. Like, that's not why you do it. You do it because it's been tested and tried. So it does narrow it down a little. So I'd been with that company for a long time. And then when everything started happening during quarantine, like the social and political and racial unrest, I really found my voice in that. And I realized I'm very vocal about those things on social media, on my platforms, right? And I just felt very passionately about certain things as an individual. And as I was looking at the different companies that I partnered with and been sponsored by, I realized like, there's just certain, I think as a company, you don't have to be vocal about things because you're a company. Like, you don't have to. You're a business and you need to brand yourself, and that's your right. As an individual, same. I felt like for me, I needed to be vocal. But I realized with my former supplement company, I was like, they're like silent on this stuff. And their athletes are so diverse. Like, how are you this silent when literally all of your athletes are like, look at us. You know what I mean? So that didn't make sense to me. And I had voiced it to my liaison a few times. And I said, I just don't understand. Their silence is deafening. Like, I just had a problem with it. I'm like, I just feel like I've been with you guys for almost 10 years. Like, why aren't you saying anything about this stuff? Like, you're literally profiting off of your athletic team, but you're not speaking up on these issues. You don't have to, but I have a problem with this. And this went on for a while, and through a different set of actions, I made the decision. I was like, you know, I think I'm going to separate myself from this company, which it was a tough choice because I'd been with them for so long and they had supported me for so much of my career. But I just felt like I want to know every company I represent, that I represent them proudly and to the fullest, that I can say to anybody like, yeah, you know, I am in line with this company. Not just they send me free stuff. Like, it's literally like, no, like everything they stand for, I stand for. I needed to be able to say that for myself. And not every athlete feels that way. But for me, I needed to feel like I believe in this stuff, and I need you to be
vocal. Like I needed that, right? So then I was like, well, here's the task of finding a new supplement company, because like I am in a weight class sport and I don't eat meat and I have to supplement, you know, and I have like skin problems and I just, you know, like I need to supplement. So I did some homework and I just was kind of looking at athletes that like high level Olympic level athletes, and X Endurance was a product that I had seen in like my feeds a lot. So I did some homework and I reached out to them and said everything I just said to you. I was like, this is why. And they were like, are you with this company? I'm like, I am, but they know that we're parting ways and it is mutual. It's fine. But I was very candid. I'm like, listen, like this is literally why I'm stepping away from this company. It's not because they don't have a good product, but the product matters. And I want you guys to know that I want to be able to say what I feel on my platforms. And like, that's important to me, you know? And so that was literally why the connection happened. And they were so in line with it. And I remember speaking with Ashley early on, and she was like, you know, we actually want our team to be more diverse. We don't want all of our athletes to be like white CrossFit athletes, right? We literally don't want to, and that's okay. If you are one of those, that is awesome. But she was like, we really want our team to be diverse. So you are finding us and we are finding you at the right time. And so that's literally how the relationship took place. I knew it was a product that I could trust because I knew other Olympic athletes that used it. And so, and then after like they picked me up, I learned more about the product and what a good product it was really. And so that was really how that relationship happened. It wasn't random. It was very thoughtful process that, I don't know, like this year and this experience, everything going on, it really did impact me differently than other people. But even, you know, like, what do I want to represent? Like, what brands do I want to brand? And so athletes are always, we got to get paid. We got to be healthy. But it's like I said before, and I'll say it again, like, you have to know where you stand on things.
Well, hey, it sounds as if, you know, something that you said over the past hour or so a couple of times was that, you know, like you keep on evolving and, yeah, you know, you are with regards to things that you're up to. So you're up to a new project.
Yeah.
Can you share with us what you're up to?
Yeah. So I'm recording an EP. It's an extended playlist, which is kind of like, as a musician, it's kind of like, it's like introducing yourself to the music world, so to speak. It's like a short compilation of songs I've written. And then the first song that I did, it just came out so well. And the message is so uplifting and so relevant to the times that I was like, you know, I think I want to make a music video out of this. So I am still, I'm in the process of completing the second song on the EP. I'm going to go in Saturday and we're going to like do all the finishing touches. And then in December, I'm shooting and filming my first music video, which I'm excited about just because, like, for me, music, there's never any bad days. You don't ever lose with music. That's just my passion. And it's really my first love. And I really get shy when I sing for people on the spot. I'm so sorry. I know, that's so weird. I just get a little gun shy. I think it's the introvert in me. I do well with big crowds, but not like intimate settings when it comes to performing. But yeah, we're going to be shooting it and I'm really excited. And I don't totally know what I'm doing because, again, I put music on hold really essentially for my entire wrestling career. So, and the industry has changed a lot since 2003, but I'm just trying to stay true to myself and just like make music and put it out there because I feel like that's literally like, that's kind of how it works. So yeah, I'm really excited. It's a strange process. And even in the music industry, you have to really speak up for what you want. But it's so fun to be like bringing that to life. I've literally waited my whole life to do this. So I'm excited about it.
Oh my gosh. This is so powerful. Well, you're going to have to share with us when it's out so that we can share it.
If you all listen to my music and like download it when I release it, I promise we will do this again. I'll do a live performance. I promise.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll do this again. Accountable.
Look at Tiffany.
Yeah. That's the second song.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there's a couple of people wanting to know what.
That's my Cookie Monster dress.
Where can they listen to all of your stuff, Kelsey?
So obviously the EP is not released. I have stuff that I did on my own on SoundCloud. I have links on my Instagram and on my website, like my Linktree has links to my SoundCloud. I have stuff on YouTube. I do have a YouTube channel. It's really messy and it's kind of hard to find my music just because it's so saturated with like wrestling stuff. Like if you were to Google me, it'd be like a lot of wrestling stuff, but I have tons of stuff online. It's just not, a lot of it's just stuff I did with GarageBand and like literally on my laptop in my kitchen and then like a few live performances, but it's pretty easy to find stuff, to find anything if you Google it. So, and then I have little clips on my Instagram like that. Yeah.
And then before we close this, a couple of people were wondering what is your favorite ex-endurance product? And if you don't eat any meat, which ex-endurance product do you benefit from most?
I mean, definitely the like protein powder. It's like a big thing. And it, I use the protein powder is what I use the most consistently. I use Focus. And then they have like this grape flavored hydration mix that's awesome. And I have a really high sweat rate, so I tend to cramp really easy. So that's like important for me. And then just the Focus, it's just, I think it's anything you can do to like complement like your focus and your brain health. I do that. And then they have like a CBD supplement, which not everybody takes CBD, but it has MCT in it, which I take in the morning, but I do take that sometimes. It works really well though. So if I have to get up early, I don't take it because it like knocks you out. But yeah, the protein and then Focus and then the Hydra Sticks. Those are the ones I use the most most consistently, specifically because I do have to supplement protein a lot and then just keeping my hydration up because yeah. And I live in Arizona and it's just dry here. So yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So, I mean, you've been awesome and I've seen it in the chat box that like everybody's saying that this has been their favorite interview yet. I love speaking with you so much and thank you so much for your time this morning. But if anybody wants to learn about you more, where can they find you?
I mean, you'll learn a lot about and you'll see like social media. I'm very candid. Instagram. All my handles are pretty consistently World Changer. I am probably going to change it soon, but like Instagram, World Changer _USA, Twitter, World Changer 55. And then my Facebook page, I post on it a little, but mostly it's just posts that come from other platforms and it's just Kelsey Campbell. But yeah, like I try to be present in ways that feel authentic to me. But yeah, you definitely will get to know my personality quite a bit if you see me on any of those platforms. But now that we've chatted a little, hopefully you'll know like who I am as a person. And like I said, not totally gauge me off of those highlight reels. But yeah, I'm pretty easy to find online. Yeah.
Well, hey, it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure. And thank you so much for your time. And for those of you guys listening, it sounds like you absolutely loved it. And it's our honor and pleasure. You guys are awesome. Man, this community just keeps on inspiring me each and every day. Kelsey, thanks for waking up earlier for us this morning. And thank you guys for joining us. We do this, Kelsey.
Oh, this? Okay, cool. I can do that.
There we go. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Espresso with Erin and Suri. On your way out, be sure to check out our website, erinandsuri.com, to keep up to date with what we have going on and maybe grab some free stuff.
And if you feel so inclined, hop on over to leave us a 5-star review, wink, wink. And remember, life is more fun when you subscribe to Erin and Suri.